This is The Allusionist, in which I, Helen Zaltzman, deliver a present down language's chimney. As if that's not creepy. Coming up in today's show is a heartwarming festive story. On with the show.
To be honest, these letters have been coming in as long as I've lived in that Chelsea apartment. And even before that, the gentleman that lived before us had been getting the letters, only about four or five. And then they had told me that the guys before them had been getting the letters.
This is Jim Glaub. He and his husband Dylan Parker were living in an apartment on West 22nd Street in Manhattan. And every year, these letters would arrive there, addressed to Santa. And not by accident, the letters were clearly intended to be delivered to their apartment.
It's this particular address, even the apartment number, you know, apartment number 7. So it's like very, very specific, which is strange.
But it didn't register as strange for the first few years.
If you were only getting four or five letters to Santa, you'd be like, I'm not thinking about this either.
But then, in 2010...
The letters had come in one by one at the beginning, as they normally do.
But then, more.
20 were coming a week.
And more.
30, 40, 50.
In the weeks leading up to Christmas 2010, Jim and Dylan received almost 400 letters to Santa.
Attention must be paid. You are getting so many letters that you can't ignore it. And it had started to weigh on us what to do with this.
The letter writers weren't asking for new iPhones or a racehorse or a spare car made of diamonds.
Most of it is basic stuff, like people who just need a coat or socks or basic things like shirts and sweatpants and pajamas. And it seems like there are a lot of moms who write in for their kids, obviously. But a lot of them are just trying to make ends meet. And with a little help from someone else, they could provide basic needs. That's probably the biggest theme I've seen across the board. So then at that point, I was on a mission. I was absolutely committed, dedicated, 100% obligated to get these letters fulfilled.
Why do you think you felt such an obligation to respond to the letters?
Well, it may have taken some therapy to get through that answer. I mean, I grew up really poor and... I'm in the fortunate position where I'm not anymore. You know, I read these letters and I saw a lot of myself as a kid, and I felt I had an obligation to them because of that, and maybe because of my circumstances, that I saw a lot of myself in them. And so I if there was anything I could do to give back, then it was to try to get those letters fulfilled, perhaps. To be honest, at the time, though, Helen, it was like I was a robot. I was just like, get them fulfilled.
So Jim and Dylan set about trying to respond to all the requests in the letters, but they couldn't do it all by themselves.
Dylan and I had thrown a Christmas party. It was like a holiday party. A bunch of our friends came. Of course, it was the height of Mad Men, so it was a 1960s party, specifically the year 1962. So it was so classic because it was like, you know, it truly was right out of a movie. Like everybody is dressed up in like the 60s playing like classic Christmas music. You know, the whole apartment's done up in the 60s. It's like Christmas. It's really fun. Everyone's having a blast. And then in that party, I'm like running around passing out the letters and everybody's like, what is this? What's going on? And I remember reading them with everybody and people are sort of passing theirs around and sort of like, what is going on here? Everybody was so overwhelmed by it. They were so overwhelmed by the story. They were overwhelmed by the actual letters. And everybody did agree to take a letter and they would fulfill it.
The party guests couldn't handle all the letters, so Jim sought out more helpers.
I was going into buildings and friends' companies, and I was like bringing the stack of letters, and I was like, I remember going to like all of the Broadway offices, like the advertising agencies and all the like marketing companies and all the ticketing companies, and going door to door because they were friends. And I was like, please take a letter, take a letter. And there was even a point where I think it was like a week before Christmas, I started to get really panicky because they still had so many letters left, that I was on the street and I was asking strangers on the street to take letters. And that's when Dylan was like, okay, this has gone too far. But I just felt this obligation, you know, we both did. We felt like we had to do something about it.
Sounds like it was quite stressful.
Oh gosh, it was so stressful. Because it was also, other life was happening, you know, so much of just your regular life. And then sort of being daunted with like a stack of, not just a stack, a desk filled. Is that a measurement we can use? I don't even know, like literally bags of letters. It weighed a lot. Like I remember not sleeping very well. Like it was really hard. It took so long just to even explain the story so that someone could even take a letter. Do you know what I mean? Like it was like, no, you need to. And they're like, where did this come from? I was like, I don't know, but you got to do it. And they're like, but you need to explain more to me what's going on. I was like, but I don't have time. I have 400 letters I got to get rid of. Can you just take it?
So in my mind's eye, this scenario where you were running around going, take a letter, please take a letter. You're played by Jimmy Stewart. And it's very much got that mid-20th century festive film ambience to it.
I have to say, Helen, it really did feel like that. And every day during this whole thing, I was like, oh my God, this is like right out of a movie, which is funny because it is going to be a movie.
It is indeed going to be a movie. Tina Fey is writing it.
I don't know. Maybe it is that these sort of heightened circumstances make it feel like you have to sort of jump and make a snap judgment and do whatever it takes to get the job done.
Were you and Dylan always in agreement about how to respond?
No, we were not. You know, Dylan was he was really concerned. He's more pragmatic. He's very practical. He was nervous about safety. He was nervous about like giving people's addresses out to random strangers. He was nervous about where this came from. We have charities and places that we donate to. We have lives, we have families, we have other things to do. This was taking up a lot of time and a lot of energy and a lot of like emotions. He was just coming at it from a very real and practical place. And he saw that I was fraught. I mean, it was really upsetting for me. I couldn't sleep. I was like really worried about it. I was worried about these families. I was worried about their like well-being. I mean, and he saw that that took a lot of toll. And so I think he probably handled it like most people would, which is like, let's take a realistic approach to this. He was the one who would like try to find out where it's coming from. Yeah. We handled it very differently.
Nonetheless, the upshot was Jim and Dylan and their friends and acquaintances and the strangers who'd been accosted by Jim, this cohort of elves worked on answering all the letters, obtaining the requested gifts, delivering the items themselves or via mail order, whether anonymously or with their contact details, or marked from Santa.
One letter that affected me the most was a colleague had picked out a letter and she read the letter aloud, and it was from a little boy. He was like 9 or 10, and he had just said that his back was hurting him because he didn't have a bed to sleep in because he's constantly sleeping on the couch or on the floor. So he asked for a single bed, which was, I don't know, it's just like one of those things you're just like, oh my God, we take these things for granted, these basic needs of that there are kids who just don't even have simple things like a bed. So he did get one. She was like hysterical. And she got a couple of her friends together and they essentially bought this little kid a bed, which is really sweet and really heartwarming.
By Christmas, they had managed to respond to most of the letter writer's Christmas wishes.
That year, we had to deliver about 50, 60 letters back to the post office because we couldn't get them fulfilled. But the good news is that since that year, we've had every letter fulfilled that has come through to us, which is extraordinary.
Yes, Jim and Dylan didn't stop after that year. Although the letters kind of did.
The next year was strange because we only got about 30 letters at the Chelsea apartment.
Even though the previous year, Jim and Dylan's festive efforts had garnered a lot of press attention. Their friend Sarah, a documentarian, had made a short film about them, which was featured in the New York Times, and lots of people had come forward wanting to help respond to the letters.
I was very disappointed in the fact that we actually didn't have a lot of letters to give out. We sort of were like, okay, well, we got those fulfilled, and that was about 30 families, which is still amazing. But then the next year came around, and then it was only like 8.
But by then, it was no longer just about the letters anyway.
We had started the Facebook group, and it had sort of taken on a life of its own, right? Where people were using the Facebook group as a way to connect with other families. So that sort of had grown meanwhile while the letters were going down. But then the next year, another 300 letters came in, and we weren't even living there. Like, it was the it was this poor gentleman who's like, I don't know what's going on here. So we've now kept a relationship with everybody who lives in that apartment. And it's not always easy. I have to write them a letter and I have to knock on their door or get a friend to knock on the door and try to catch them if they're home to say, oh, by the way, you're a part of this revolution.
Your apartment comes with a certain obligation. Hear me out.
But everyone has been absolutely lovely who's lived there, and they end up becoming an elf themselves and they help distribute. So it feels like a bit of a legacy thing.
As it does for other people who've become involved over the years.
This young woman who'd said, I'm just so thankful. I'm now an elf. I am sponsoring a family this year. But 6 years ago, I was the 15-year-old girl who didn't have a Christmas. And thanks to this group of people, I did. You know, so it's amazing. We've been doing it for so long that we actually have people growing up to give back. And isn't that awesome?
Now, Jim and Dylan run a non-profit called Miracle on 22nd Street to fulfill requests from families in need. On their website, miracleon22ndstreet.com, you can volunteer to respond to a letter to help out a family. You can donate. And if you need help for your family, you can send your request. And Jim and Dylan and their team of elves will do their best to fulfill the requests in people's letters to Santa. But one big question remains.
So where did the letters come from? To be honest, we really don't know. There's theories. Do you want the practical answer or do you want the magical answer? The practical one is that perhaps someone had lived in the apartment. I mean, at least we know going back more than a decade before us, had perhaps been a part of this sort of giving back Santa organization, that our address was potentially in a newsletter that goes out to the school districts, and that teachers potentially gave them out to the parents to write in, because a lot of the letters that came in were in Spanish. So we think that some of them might have been like from a specific ESL class. However, it was confirmed that when we would ask the people where they had got it from, some of them had said a newsletter, some of them had said they got it from a friend. Some of them didn't know. They just had it. So that's the practical answer. The magical answer, which I think is really fascinating, is that, you know, the block, 22nd Street, is on that essential street is the estate of Clement Clark Moore,
who is credited with writing the poem A Visit from St. Nicholas.
'Twas a night before Christmas and all through the house. It's like a classic American poem. People read it over the fire on Christmas Eve.
First published in 1823, the poem was a huge hit and is credited with inventing Santa's 8 reindeer and their names. Dasher, Dancer, Prancer, Vixen, Comet, Cupid, Dunder and Blixem. Those last two were tweaked to Donner and Blitzen in later printings. Though there is some debate over whether Clement Clark Moore is the true author of the poem, he still gets the festive reputation. And he had inherited an estate which spanned several blocks of Chelsea.
So he lived on that street, I think like 2 doors down. And it was back in the 1800s when all of those houses were essentially one, right? So there was thought that when he lived there and he wrote that poem, that people thought that that's actually where Santa Claus lived and had sent letters to that address thinking that that's where Santa lived. And so had this been going on since the 1800s, who knows?
Alternate explanation. Santa himself was a previous tenant at that address before he moved to the North Pole when rent hikes priced him out of New York. I mean, you try finding a parking spot in Manhattan for a sleigh.
Why do you think people want to answer the letters and people want to get involved?
Well, I think people love the magic behind this. There's definitely that level of like, what is this? The mystery of it, which is still, I wish there was a straight answer for. There just is not. But I also think that we just all are striving. I think we are all craving a connection and to be able to give back. And it feels like this around the height of Christmas and what Christmas means. It feels just like a perfect storm of how people can give back and feel something and feel connected with other people that are just like them. People want to feel like they are making a direct connection with the family and that they are helping them out. There are so many good people out there. And there's so many, much more than I think we think. It feels like we're in a world of villains right now, but that is absolutely not the case. There's so many heroes, people who care, and they just want to give back, and they want to feel that we're all in this together. And that, I think, has been the best thing that I've gotten out of this. There's so many good people out there, and I'm happy that all of this has brought more people together.
Your randomly selected word from the dictionary today is Weisgus, noun, a printer's annual dinner or picnic. Try using it in an email today. This episode was produced by me, Helen Zaltzman, with a score by Martin Austwick. Jim Glaub is the chair of the non-profit Miracle on 22nd Street. Find out more about their work to help families in need at miracleon22ndstreet.com, where you can also donate and get involved. Find The Allusionist online, search for Allusionist Show on Facebook and Twitter, and over on the show's website, you'll find every episode and transcripts and the full dictionary entries for all of the randomly selected words. There are listings for any events I'm doing. There is merch, including an excellent Winterval riff on the festive sweater featuring several different cultures for all occasions that require multi-denominational festive wear. I've also put together a festive gift guide for word enthusiasts. All of this is at the show's forever home, theallusionist.org.